Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is coming up next. Audio and podcast of The Steve Jones Show, a service of Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is The Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
The Chateau is open for business. The Sunbury Motors Studio. Very important on a day like this to say, first of all, hello to Kevin Herr.
Hello, sir.
Great to have you with us. That'll be the last time you hear from him the rest of the half hour.
Great. By the way, I have to change my bracket now after the information from Syracuse.
Yes, Fab Mello, gone.
See ya again.
Thanks for being a part of the operation, Fab.
It didn't work so well one other time. You know, why would it? You know, you got to get on the right path now. It's the postseason. It's the tournament. Get on the straight and narrow now. No, he's gone. Eligibility. Or in this case, exactly. The lack of eligibility.
Yeah, not happening. Gone.
So I've now had to re-bracket my bracket.
Well done.
Thanks.
Well done. All right. Well, I enjoy talking basketball with Kevin, but I think it's time to talk a little hoop. Bring in Dr. Girardi. Hello, Dick.
Hi, Steve.
He sounds so happy.
It's been so long.
It's been so long. Yes, yesterday he was doing a chat online, and he'd say, how do you answer this one? I give him an answer. That's good, though. What is tremendous. First four start tonight with a pair of games. Mm-hmm. These are, in my opinion, the single most difficult games to call because they find out at 7 o'clock on a Sunday night, they have to be in Dayton Monday morning, go through a practice, and then play a game.
Yeah, other than that, yeah, pretty easy.
Yeah, pretty easy. We know why it went to 65, because of the Mountain West split from the WAC.
I wouldn't give up an at-large, but couldn't stay at 30 conferences. Yeah, there you go.
Couldn't do that. So I know we have to live with 68, but is still 68 the wrong way to go? Should it have stayed at 64?
Yes. Yeah, at 64, everybody understood it. It was easy. It would start on Thursday. Everybody had a shot at six games, and that's the most you could play. So, yeah, it's a little confusing, but it was interesting, Steve. I mean, 2 years ago, they were really putting 96 out there pretty hard, including talking about it at the Final Four. And then when they came out a little while later and said, no, it's only going to be 68, up from 65, and everybody said, oh, that's not too bad. So I don't know whether they set it up that way or what, but, I mean, it's better than 96, but I thought 64 was fine.
Yeah, I think in part when they were floating 96, I think they felt they could get away with 68 and did.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think that's exactly what happened.
So now they go through this thing. Overall, did the committee do well in terms of who's in, who's out, and how it was seated?
I thought for the most part, I mean, I had a couple quibbles here and there. Certainly, I thought Drexel should have been in, but then I had an opportunity to see them a lot more than probably any of the committee members. And I'm not sure who I would have necessarily said, hey, they got to go to get Drexel in. I thought some of the seeds were a little weird. I thought Long Beach State at 12 was way off. Memphis probably should have been a little better than an 8, given how they had finished. I didn't understand why Missouri was number 8 on their list and rather than a little higher, but that turned out to be fine because they end up playing the number 4. Number 1, if that makes sense, Michigan State, so if they get to the regional final, so that's fine. Yeah, I think overall they did fine.
Yeah, in terms of the seeded teams, the only quibble I have is I thought Michigan State should have been seeded higher. I felt that Michigan should have been seeded higher, only because in the conference standings, they finished ahead of both Wisconsin and Indiana, and not only that, they made the semifinal.
Where is Michigan State?
Four.
The three would have been more realistic given what they had done. Given, as you said, the others, they shouldn't have equated them with Wisconsin and Indiana to me. So. Yeah, I'm with you on that.
Indiana, Wisconsin are both fours. That's fine. And Purdue ended up being a 10. That's fine. I just looked at Michigan and thought a three would have been befitting of their body of work.
Yeah, you know what? It's possible that it could have been to avoid, like, Big Ten playing too soon and without asking somebody who was in the room that they dropped them a line. They actually belonged on the three line. That's possible. They will do that just because they have all these bracket principles. I've actually suggested to them a couple of years ago, just get rid of all those bracket principles and do it like the state playoffs. Just whoever you play, you play.
Right.
But they still hear it all that thing. Like Michigan, to me, would have been better than Georgetown. Georgetown's a three, Michigan's a four. And I would certainly concur with that. But hey, what are you going to do?
And Georgetown, by the way, I think has a difficult opening round. They get Belmont, who's won 14 in a row. Yes.
Yeah, I did. I picked them. They almost won a Cameron this year, so, you know, they're not going to be frazzled by going somewhere. It's only Columbus, Ohio. I think that is a double-digit seed with a legitimate chance in round two. I can't get that through my head yet.
Yes, the game we broadcast last year was a second-round game, Dick.
Yes. Right. round one is now tonight, right?
Yeah, round one's tonight. I'm with you. To me, those are play-in games. But
yeah, right. The NCAA didn't like the term play-in. So.
Right. They made it seem like you were outside of the tournament trying to get yourself into the tournament. Wow.
Right.
Now, they've gone through this once, though, and there's Virginia Commonwealth. They were in that opening at Dayton a year ago, and they made it all the way to the Final Four.
Yeah, first four to the Final Four. That was pretty cool. I mean, the name is nice, the first four. I get all that. That's cool. Again, I'd like to go back to 64. We're not going back, Steve.
No.
Here to stay, I'm sure.
Yeah, I don't think there's going to be anybody that says, you know what, I think it ought to be 48 teams like it was in 1982.
Nah,
I don't think that's going to happen.
That horse has left the barn. We're not getting him back.
And speaking of horses that have left the barn, whenever you fly into Lexington, Keeneland is right outside the airport, and just down the road is someplace called Rupp Arena and the University of Kentucky. You and I saw Kentucky in person this year.
Yep.
I know you and I sat in the end zone and watched them play, and you and I walked out of there convinced.
Yeah, they're the best team in the country, Steve. I got to see them obviously play Penn State. You were doing the Ohio State game that day, and they were great that day, and then you and I saw them the next day.
Old Dominion.
Old Dominion, who they were playing it so long ago. You could see even then, and obviously they've gotten dramatically better. And I saw some of the SEC title game, not all of it on Sunday. It didn't look like they were fully engaged. They knew they were already the number one overall seed, and it really meant something to Vanderbilt, so I wouldn't draw too many conclusions from that. But, look, they have the best players going in. Does that guarantee them winning? Obviously not. We've got to win six games. But the first two are in Louisville. The next two are in Atlanta. And then New Orleans, sounds like pretty good road trips to me for Kentucky and their fans.
And fortunately, Kentucky travels pretty well. Maybe they could play in Anchorage, they'd be there. and you look at Kentucky, we talk about personnel, but John Calipari understands, you know, people can talk about John Calipari all they want with recruiting and so forth, whatever. But the guy can coach college basketball.
Yeah, I mean, he proved it at UMass when he really didn't have great players, certainly early on, got them very competitive in the A-10. Then when he got Marcus Camby, got him all the way to the Final Four, went to the pros for a while, came back, got it done at Memphis, getting it done at Kentucky. You can talk to recruiting and how do these players show up and all that stuff, but the reality is the guy can really coach the game. A lot of people can get really good players and find a way to not succeed, and he obviously has succeeded about as well as you can. I mean, look, he's done everything but win the last game, and he should have won it in 08. He gave the championship away with Memphis, so he gets another try this year.
And, of course, I had a chance to see him in his coaching infancy at UMass because they were in the Atlantic 10 with Penn State at the time.
Yeah.
And I saw him take nothing and then add the Jimmy McCoys in, add the Tony Barbies in, and eventually build something. In fact, I think the first real signature win for him would have been the 1990 Atlantic 10 semifinals at the Palestra when they beat Penn State. I think it was 54-51, and they got to the Atlantic 10 championship game. It may have been just his third year at UMass, but it showed that he was on the rise as a coach.
Yeah, you could see it. And then I want to say the next year maybe they played LaSalle in the NIT. I actually did that game at the old Curry Hicks Cage. Still go over to this last game at LaSalle, and UMass ended up winning that game. And it was 5 years later. They were in the Final Four with Marcus Gamby up at the Meadowlands, where they lost to Rick Pitino's great Kentucky team. So, yeah, Steve, it didn't take long. And I guess Lou Rowe was his first signature recruit. And you said Jimmy McCoy. I mean, they certainly had some deep players up there. They didn't have any superstar players other than Gamby. I mean, he was the one guy who was the big-time NBA guy. But other than that, he did it with sort of lunch pail guys. And as you know, he's a Western PA guy and was at Pittsburgh for a while and Kansas. He's been a lot of places, and now he's it. He's just done everything, as I said, but win the championship. And you got to think it's going to happen 1 year. It might be this.
And he had, and when you watch his team play, he embraces what the modern game is. They can all run the floor. They're all within a certain range height-wise. They all have 4 out of 5 on the floor can shoot threes, and they play great defense.
Yeah, I think the defense is the signature, with Anthony Davis being the signature player for that, the freshman from Chicago, who, interestingly enough, was an unknown recruit through his junior year of high school. It's hard to believe that that could actually happen, but he played for some unknown school in the middle of nowhere in Chicago. That it was just a league that they didn't, nobody covered, and then he went nuts in the AAU circuit and has been a star ever since. So, yeah, Davis, and they have a great shooter in Deron Lamb, and Kid Gilchrist is just one of those slashing guys. And, I mean, they got players at every position. And the only, to me, when I watch them, the only issue I have is Teague's point guard play going to be good enough? He's had moments where he's been really good, other moments where he hasn't been. If they're going to get beat, I would think it's going to be a night where he just doesn't play well.
And not only that, but he also struggles at the free throw line at certain moments, too, and that it enters into your ability to put a game away. Syracuse plays the 2-3 zone. It is their staple, their signature. And with the length across their front line and with their guards, they can leak those guards out because, Dick, they're already in fast break position.
Yeah, that is their signature. They're the best in the country at going from defense to offense. And as I've always said to people, I said the reason they're so good at it is because, as you just said, if they're playing a 2-3 zone, well, the two guys are natural run-the-wing guys immediately, right, because they're set up to do it. They're basically at the elbows playing defense, and then if they get a rebound, they're off. It goes to the point guard or whoever's dribbling, who runs the ball to the middle, and the next thing you know, you look up at the dunk. So, yeah, I think that is one of the real hidden values of playing exclusively a 2-3 zone. Because, look, if you're in man, your runners may end up getting caught under the rim, getting defensive rebounding, and they may never get a chance to run.
Dick, obviously you and I saw Michigan State in person. When we saw them, they had Brandon Dawson. I was impressed with the fact that they went through a three-day run in three games in 3 days without one of their players they had counted on and survived it and won the tournament.
Yeah, me too. When I saw them, whenever we saw them, I'm losing track, it's sometime in February. I liked them. I didn't love them. I think they've just gotten better and better, and we know Tom Izzo is one of the best NCAA tournament coaches there is. Because, and the reason I think that is, Steve, everybody says, well, he's prepared and he can do the quick turnaround. I think it's because they're so well organized for months and years before the tournament that they don't, last minute stuff doesn't faze them. They'll just plug in, all right, here's what will work. Here's the 6 things we do here. This will work. So they're all so ready. And then when it comes time to plug those things in, they just go do it. Of course, they have better half court sets than just about anybody. They're not super talented. They don't have a lot of pros on the team. They play together, and they can make a pretty good case they have the best leader in the country in Draymond Green, and that does matter on the tournament.
And that does matter indeed, and they funnel everything through him. Of the people I've watched the last 2 years, Dick, I would think that Green is the best passing big man I've seen. You know, you've seen a few other guys than I have, but probably the best passing big man I've seen the last 2 years.
Yeah, I like the same question. Yeah, I agree totally. He's one of those point forwards that he's not necessarily a great ball handler. He doesn't handle the ball that much, but when he catches the ball at the top of the key or wherever he catches it, he always sees a play ahead. And you're right, I can't think of anybody as a big man that's a better passer than Green, and that's just one other skill that he has. He's obviously a double-double guy. He can go out and make threes. He knows the game. I thought Sunday he wasn't having a good shooting game at all in the Big Ten championship game, and then he made the biggest shot of the game with that three late to give Michigan State a cushion. It rode to the wire against Ohio State.
There are, what, five city teams that are going to postseason play, one in the CBI Penn, three to the NIT, St. Joe's, Drexel, and LaSalle, but one to the NCAA. It turns out it's not Villanova. They're the one of the six that's out. But it's Temple that's going. They're going as a five, Dick. I think that is a dangerous five right there.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think they were concerned because they lost in the quarterfinals of the Atlantic 10. They drop a little lower in the speed lines, but their body of work with a win over Duke and the schedule they play was enough to get them there. And they play a first-round game or second-round game. They just don't know who they're playing yet because they're going to play tomorrow night, South Florida or California, out in Dayton in one of the first four games. And then they'll play them the late game, probably 10 o'clock start Friday night in Nashville. California actually beat them last year in the Old Spice. Temple was awful in that game. I remember watching on Thanksgiving weekend. They couldn't play any worse. South Florida, they haven't played them. We saw them early. Penn State actually beat them up at Mohegan Sun. They've changed a lot since then. They don't score, but they keep you from scoring. Cal sort of the same way, not quite to that much, that extent, but low scoring. I think Temple's going to have a little too much offensive firepower for either one of those teams. I would think they should get through. And probably to Michigan, assuming John Beilein's team can beat Ohio, and that is a game I would like to see because that will be a coaching clinic and a lot of threes going up and kind of a finesse game, but a really, really fun game to potentially watch.
Yeah, volume threes in that game with Wyatt, Moore, Burke, Hardaway, Douglas, Novak, volume threes if they meet in a 4-5.
Yeah, now Michigan shoots as many as anybody. I mean, that's what they should like. I think 46% of their shots are threes.
Right.
Temple not quite to that extent, but they're clearly an outside-in team. It said Moore, Wyatt, Fernandez, all very good three-point shooters.
The other city teams, by the way, all ended up in the NIT. St. Joe's, Penn State, whom St. Joe's played. LaSalle, whom Penn State will play next year. And Drexel, and then Penn went to the CBI and bought a home game.
Yeah, they did, and all of them, interestingly enough, are playing tomorrow night at home.
Right.
Right about the same time, they're all like 7 o'clock start times. St. Joe's plays Northern Iowa from the Missouri Valley. Minnesota's in the Gola Arena. Tubby Smith's going to look around and go, hey, am I lost here? Because it's going to look like this practice gym.
Right.
Beats about 2,500 on a good day. And as Quinnipiac in the CBI and Drexel, which, of course, was disappointed didn't get in the NCAA place, Central Florida with Michael Jordan's son, Marcus, who's their star player.
And by the way, Pitt went to the CBI, which I was taken aback by that.
Interesting. Yeah, I would have thought Jamie Dixon, after the bad luck they had with the injuries and they just didn't play well, he might want the season to be over with, but I guess he's thinking, look, let's get some more games and see if we can figure it out. Because, yeah, who would have thought that neither Pittsburgh or Villanova was going to be any kind of a factor in the Big East when the season started? You just couldn't have imagined it.
No, you really could not imagine it. And that the postseason play, you know, everyone knew Temple would make it. I think everyone was pretty confident about that. But the only other teams in the state to go to postseason play would be Penn, Drexel, St. Joe's, LaSalle, and Bucknell.
Lehigh,
to me.
Bucknell might be playing in the CBI too, Steve, I think.
Who's that?
Or, you know what? They're in the NIT because they won the regular season in the Patriots.
Right.
Yeah. Bucknell and Lehigh are both playing. Lehigh has the good fortune of going to play Duke in Greensboro.
Right. You know what? If I'm Duke, I don't take that game lightly. Between McCollum
playing well, yeah.
And Knutson, the big kid who can go play inside or out.
Yeah.
If I were them, I wouldn't sleepwalk that game. They're better. Yeah. We both know that, but I wouldn't sleepwalk it.
No, I hear you. You know, if it was on a real neutral court, you would really like their chances, but obviously Greensboro is not all that neutral.
Duke is not going to play in a neutral court, Dick?
No.
Really?
And then if they would win, they're in Atlanta, but they would get overwhelmed by Kentucky fans. Down.
Right, at that point. You know what I found interesting? Last night, Comcast was playing back a Philly Classic, and it was the Duke Kentucky game.
Oh, right. Sure.
'91-'92 season. And, and at one point, Vern Lundquist, when Leitner steps to the line, says,
They have attempted 900 free throws this year at Duke. The opposition has attempted 500. I almost called you. Nothing has changed, Dick. Nothing's changed.
No, it's funny. That's what they do. They get to the line, and they get there a lot.
Indeed, they do get there a lot. Dick is going to hang with us through the break. And after the news with Sarah Bartlett at the bottom of the hour, we will continue to freeze out Kevin Herr. So where you jump in?
Now, right now. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Good. I don't want to miss my opportunity.
Yeah. To be honest with you, I have several emails at stevejonesshow.com.
Uh-huh.
Feeling that this may have been your strongest segment since the 4 o'clock hour on Friday.
Wow. That was a good hour for me, too, because I was on the road.
Sarah Bartlett in the news after this.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
That would be me. Welcome to the show. By the way, an opportunity here for Kevin Herr to speak.
Hi, Steve.
Great to have you with us.
And that was it. All right, thanks.
And we roll on with Dick Girardi, my broadcast partner on the Penn State Sports Network. And, Dick, we were talking before the news about the NCAA tournament, and you and I often talk about possessions. And is this really the ultimate possession game? Are these really the ultimate possession games and really the ultimate games where the lines, the three-point and the foul line come into play?
Yeah, you better be able to shoot threes. That's my biggest concern about North Carolina. They don't shoot many of them, and they're not very good at it, although they certainly can score. They're the second highest scoring team in the country because they score so well inside and get free throws, but it's a little different. It's a little harder to come back without making threes. Yeah, it is. I mean, you got to get to the foul line. You got to score points where the clock is stopped, and you got to make threes. Because if you don't, it's just so hard to win 2x2. If you're up against one of these squads, it's like a Murray State of the world that are just going to start launching threes, or Florida, which makes more than anybody, it just becomes a math problem if they're making threes and you're making twos.
Because of the depth of college basketball, every time, of course, a 9, for example, beats an 8, you hear a CBS announcer say, hey, it's an upset. And, of course, we both know that's absurd.
Right.
In reality, are there actually relatively few upsets because of the depth of college basketball? Now, I'm not saying that the game is at its highest level it's ever been, but I'm talking about the teams being more balanced now.
Yeah, no, the game obviously is dramatically different than it was even 10 years ago, where more players stayed in school longer, and that's why it's tilted a little bit to give a VCU or a Butler with veteran players a chance to get through, because maybe they're playing some of these power teams that have only freshmen and sophomores that have one foot out the door already. So, yeah, that maybe the talent level is not all that much different, Steve, but it's maybe the experience level. And the talent is spread out a little more than maybe it was. It might have been concentrated in a half a dozen schools. That's no longer the case. There probably aren't as many actual upsets. In fact, if you look at the point spreads of the games in the opening rounds, there used to be like 35-point spreads in these games. You don't see that. Even the 116 game. So, yeah, I think that's a fair statement that it is more even. And there, even though people will be screaming about upsets, there probably are, in reality, fewer of them than maybe they're used to.
Because I'm with you, say Belmont were to win over Georgetown. Say they were. Mm-hmm. Belmont has been through. Their players have all played in the NCAA tournament. In fact, they were in Tucson where we were last year.
Yep.
And they've been through it. So when they go to the open practice, they've done that before. When they've gone to the press conference, they've done that before. When they've had to, you know, the travel, they've done that before. They've won 14 games in a row. You're going to tell me a team that's won 14 games in a row just because they're a 14 seed and the other guy's a 3 seed, that's an upset?
Yeah, no, you're right. Exactly. Yeah, it will be perceived that way just because the seedings and all that. But a lot of times seedings are a function of what league you played in, who did you play, not really how you can play. And that's always been, in fact, my biggest beef with the committee is they're more into all those numbers than they are in actually watching teams. But I understand it's subjective, objective. Everybody has their own way of determining things. But, yeah, no, these teams can play.
twice you were put in that room as an educational experience because they want more openness as to how the field is selected. What did you learn about that process that maybe you had not learned before as to how they think and what actually is difficult about it?
Yeah, really the mechanics of it. They're also in the computer terminal. And what's the most important thing they do, obviously, is select the 37 at-large teams. So what they do first, Steve, maybe we'll take, say, all right, here's 25 teams. Does anybody disagree that these teams should be in the tournament? No. North Carolina, they're in. The obvious teams, they're all in. Then they'll take those final, look, 12, and they might have 30 teams for the 12 spots. And they'll, over time, they'll discuss, and then they'll conduct what are called ranking votes. They'll rank them one through, maybe they'll take five at a time, rank them one through five. And then over time, by doing that, little by little, they'll get down to the, all right, here's the team. We rank this team ahead of this team. And then in the end, you got to see how many actual spots you have. Some of them might end up winning the championship of their league. For instance, Sunday, they were waiting to see what would happen with St. Bonaventure. They had five teams on a list for one spot that would have been available if Xavier had won the tournament. Xavier was going to get in as an at-large. Once St. Bonaventure won, that took that spot away. So Drexel, which was one of those teams, was on the outside looking in. They never actually came to a final vote for that final at-large spot because there was no spot. They had already been, Iona and those kinds of teams that made it were already had been voted in. But they had five teams left. I think Mississippi State was one of them. Seton Hall was involved in that. But they never got around to taking that vote because it became a moot point because there was just no at-large spot.
And Washington, by the way, was not part of that vote.
Yeah, that was interesting. They went to Pac-10 regular season champions were out.
Now, when the season began, you had 140 arenas to your credit, if I recall. I had 125. I picked up Boston College, which then equaled you.
Yes, I already had that.
Okay, so that got me to 126. Mm-hmm. You did the first Mohegan Sun game.
Yes.
I came in, evened it up, did the next one. In fact, that moved you from 139 to 140. Right?
Sounds right. Okay. I'm with you so far.
Okay, so how about the 127? I then do the Duquesne game at Consol Energy, where you were sunning yourself someplace in the Bahamas.
I could not make it. That is correct.
Right. That brought 140 to 128.
Yes.
For the opening two rounds of the tournament, what did you select?
Consol Energy.
Because you had to make sure
couldn't let it happen, pal.
In the league.
I'll be in Pittsburgh tomorrow and Wednesday.
So you go to 141. Yep. I stay at 128. Despite
correct.
An impressive season of playing catch-up. You are determined I will never catch you.
That is correct.
And I would like to point out that this goes with your complete philosophy of when you and I drive together and you're driving.
And I get passed. That's a fact. That's just the way it is, man. People can't be past me. That's all.
In all the times we have driven, I would like to point out not once have we
ever been passed.
Exactly. And on this subject, there is no way I can possibly catch you.
No, I don't see it happening. Sorry, but I just don't see it.
For a brief moment on Thursday, you'll think of that.
No, I will. When I walk in and the tip goes up for the first game, I go, man, that's it for Steve.
Well, no, you'll text me. I know what you'll do. You'll text me, yo, man.
141.
141.
Nice,
you're 13
have
back.
Day.
Have a nice day.
It is crazy that we've seen games in that many arenas. Eesh.
I know. It really is.
Crazy.
Well, maybe between the two of us, we probably have seen between, 2,400 and 3,000 basketball games?
Yeah, I know. I could probably figure it out, but I'm not sure.
I'm not going to bother doing that one. The arena thing we ended up doing because we were bored one day in an airport.
Whatever
airport we were. I know people find it stunning that Penn State basketball would get stuck someplace on a road trip. But on this one particular time we did, so we thought, let's see how many arenas we've been to. No,
It's a big number, man. It's a big number.
No question.
Hey, as always, my friend, great to talk with you. I realize we have no on-air chemistry, but we fight through it all the time.
We'll do the best we can.
Yeah.
I will talk to you soon, my man.
I will talk to you soon, my man. Dick, thanks so
all
much.
See.
All right, Dick Girardi with us on the show. Kevin, you still there?
I am. I'm just laughing at the two of you. I'm picturing the two of you sitting in an airport counting up arenas.
Well, it actually was not actually in the airport because we don't usually go through airports. Now, by the way, when Jack Ham is on, you will find that this subject irks Jack Ham.
How many arenas right. he's been in or the
no,
airport part?
No. Jack flies commercial usually to the game. I, of course, he always says, oh, your private plane waiting for you to whisk you away.
See, that's what I would do, too.
He says, in other words, he says, do you know what it's like to be among the people and fly commercial?
Well, he used to do it when he worked for Westwood One and did the NFL games on Sunday. He would, and it was funny because we had him on. We had him on the air with you on Saturday and then on Sunday, and he would, I mean, there were times I swear he barely made it into the booth in time because he was flying.
Well, no, it's true. That's true. And one of my favorite but not so favorite stories at the same time, you'll understand as soon as I tell the story, is Wisconsin. Apparently, he has to do... You know, he finally decided, I want to say 8 years ago. 8 years ago, he called me up.
Long?
Yeah, he called me up. I remember it was in May. And he calls me up. He says, hey, Steve, I got to talk to you about something. I said, sure. What do you do? He says, you know, you and I are having a great time. He says, I'm having a lot of fun. He says, I don't want to do the NFL thing anymore. He says, business is going well. He says, and yeah, he says, you and I just have a blast together. So let's just, you know, I'm just going to do that. I'm not going to do the NFL thing anymore. He says, oh, okay, great. Which I thought was terrific. Okay. We were doing a game at Wisconsin. And this is the day that Chris Hort, Joe's son-in-law, fell off his bike when it hit a grate on Park Avenue on the north side of the stadium. And I remember we're at the end of the first quarter because Jack was going to get on the university plane, fly from Madison, get dropped off in Indianapolis to do a Colts-Packers game. Then the university plane was going to continue on and go home. And suddenly they come in the booth. Fran Ganner comes in. He says, something happened. We're like, really? This is the end of the first quarter. Then we get an update at halftime. Like, oh, brother. So the thought was that because Sue was on the trip, that Joe and Sue would have to fly back after the game. Instead of being on the team plane, they had to be brought to Altoona because Chris had been brought to the Altoona Trauma Center. Okay. So I'm doing the post game, and you know, because I always did the post game show myself back then. Yeah. You know, then the first year that Jack was on full time, he said, "Man, this post game show's long." I said, "Yeah, no kidding, man. Yeah, really."
He used to wave at you and then head to the flight.
Tell me about it. Yeah.
And that's so, the end of the ballgame. Gotta go.
Gotta leave. Then there were a couple times you can handle the rest of yourself, right? Yeah, I got it. And but then he calls me from downstairs. He says, Steve, I can't get on this plane. He says, you know, I guess he got pretty badly hurt. Chris, by the way, is doing great today. He's no issues.
All right.
But he said, I can't get on this plane. I can't do this. He said, I can't slow them down and get dropped off. He says, I'm going to the Madison Airport. I said, don't bother going to Madison Airport because it was a late game. I said, there are no flights from there to Indianapolis at this hour. Oh, you're right. He says, all right, well, I'll give you a call.
Okay.
So I do the post-game show. Half hour in. You know, I'm on the air for like 35 extra minutes, whatever. And I'm going down to the bus, get on the bus to take the team charter back. I get a call. Steve, it's Jack. He says, oh, yeah. He says,
All right, I'm going to Milwaukee. And I said, don't bother. He said, what do you mean don't bother? I said, Jack, there are no direct flights from Milwaukee to Indianapolis. He says, how do you know? He says, how do you know that? I said, because late in the year, I have to go from Indianapolis to Milwaukee to do basketball, and I was trying to see if we had flights. We're going to have to drive it. He says, oh, you're kidding. He says, well, I'm glad you looked. I said, okay. So then I get a call later, right? We're going to Chicago. Okay. So I take off. I fly back. I get back. Voicemail. Steve, it's Jack. I just had her drive me all the way to Indianapolis. $800.
Wow.
$800.
You know, there's somebody. Yeah, I was going to say, there's somebody somewhere that's going, you know, I've always wondered if I could get there quicker in a cab, how much it would cost. There's your answer.
There you go. 800 large. Oh. So there you go. Those are today's stories. I'm not done with stories. I have a story coming up next hour. We're also going to talk with Brian Tripp, the Lady Lion analyst, next hour. Jeff Byers from the NCAA Wrestling Championships tomorrow. You can tweet that.
All right, I will. Thanks.
Because I am now engaged in Twitter.
Did you see the tweet that we had yesterday? I believe it was
the one that says Steve is stupid. Yeah,
no,
I saw that.
No, the one that said
we will discuss that.
No, the one that said Steve just said I was going to tweet but didn't have the password. Right.
I did. Oh, it was sent to me, but I think I think I deleted the email.
Right.
I did.
I believe it. I believe you did. Usually anything with my name, you hit the delete button. But
boy, I tell you, some things in life are automatic. Wow. Our number is 1-800-795-9565, 1-800-795-9565. I know we've had Dick on for an extended window. We're going to have Brian Tripp, the Lady Lion analyst, on for a window in the next hour. Dick Harter, the former Nittany Lion basketball coach, passed away at the age of 81. And I have multiple stories. I have multiple stories.
I believe, listen, if there's one thing I've learned with you over the years, it's story time with Uncle Steve.
Oh, come on, man.
Great stories. I love it. So yeah. let's take a quick break, and then we'll have time for maybe a story.
I'm going to save this for the last half hour. Because, I mean, there are extensive stories.
All right, we could do that.
Yeah, no. I mean, Fab Mello, by the way, out of the NCAA tournament. Kevin Herwood breaking news on the show, contributing to the opening half hour. It was impressive. We'll come back with more of the Steve Jones Show on WKOK after this.
At Northumberland National Bank, the customer always comes first.
What's in your kitchen? A large island, clean contemporary lines, wide open spaces, and stainless steel appliances? A nice kitchen can be yours with a home equity loan from the Northumberland National Bank. Get a fixed-term loan based on the equity in your home. You can borrow up to 80% of your home's value and pay no bank fees. A rate discount may apply when you agree to automatic payments from your NORI deposit account. You'll be cooking like a rock star with your new home equity loan from the Northumberland National Bank. Calculate your payment at noribank.com.
At Northumberland National Bank, the customer always comes first.
Call or come by the Northumberland National Bank on Front Street Northumberland, on 4th Street Sunbury, Lorry Lane and Hummel's Wharf, Port Treverton and Middleburg.
The customer always comes first.
Member FDIC Equal Housing Lender.
March is truck month at Regester Chevrolet in Thompsontown. Regester has 48 2012 Silverado extended cab and crew cab pickup trucks in stock. That's right, 48 Silverados in stock, with savings up to $6,000 if you're trading a car or truck year 1999 or newer.
Choose from two options. Save a straight $4,000 with discounts and rebates, plus a $2,000 bonus for your trade. Or take 0% financing for 72 months, $2,000 in discounts and rebates, plus the $2,000 trade bonus. The choice is yours. Either way, you'll save up to $6,000 on a new Silverado. Now during Truck Month at Rejester Chevrolet on Main Street, Thompsontown. Open weekdays, 8 a.m. to 9 p.m., Saturdays till 4. On the web at RejesterChevrolet.com. Rejester also has 25 Chevy Cruzes and 24 Equinoxes in stock. Both get great gas mileage.
Rejester Chevrolet.
My name is Margo, and the reason I don't do drugs is because I have a friend, Emily, who has Down syndrome, and I feel that I need to be a role model towards her so that she won't do drugs when she's older, because I know that she's going to be pressured to. When she was born, I was, I think, 8 years old. 4 years old. And I knew it was going to be a girl automatically. So I planned on always playing with her. She has three brothers, so she's the only girl in their family. And they were all saying that they were going to teach her how to fight and how to play sports and how to burp and all those things. So I decided that I was going to teach her, like, how to be a girl. So that's pretty much how I was kind of determined to become her pal. So my anti-drug is my friend Emily.
A message from the Partnership for Drug-Free America, Drug-Free Pennsylvania, and this station.
Is the legacy you're leaving to your family in place? At Scheib Law, their family protection plan will make sure it is. You take your place in your family seriously, and so does Scheib Law. They will help you put your estate in order so your legacy is intact and your family will be taken care of. Scheib Law will help you save money, time, and hassle. You can rest assured knowing you're protecting your family. Find out more about the family protection plan at Scheib Law Lewisburg. Call 523-3200 or 877-313-7926.
Sense of talk for about 45 minutes with Dick Girardi about the NCAA basketball tournament. Of course, the big story today is Fab Melo is out, ruled academically ineligible, which ESPN will not talk about because it's a Syracuse guy. Our number is 1-800-795-9565. 1-800-795-9565 is our number. The next hour, we'll start out the next half hour looking at women's basketball in the tournament because the Lady Lions are in, but as a four seed, flat out ripped off by the NCAA committee. They won the regular season Big Ten championship. They won the down the stretch. They won at Purdue. They beat Ohio State soundly at home and played great basketball down the stretch. Purdue is also a four. They won the Big Ten tournament, but they get to play at home. The Lady Lions are a four. They're the 13th seed in the tournament overall out of 64 teams. But they have to play at LSU in Baton Rouge. And if they beat Texas El Paso and LSU wins its game, it's a 4-5 at the Maravich Center. Maravich did not play for Penn State. Maravich played for LSU. Thus, they're in Baton Rouge. And if they win, and again, this is the peril, and this is the part, I don't understand why people don't grasp this part of it, but in women's basketball, the chasm between 1-4 and 5-20 is greater than people believe. All right? And by being a 4, that means in the third round you play a 1, and that 1 is UConn. Now, it's the Kingston Regional. Why, in the year 2012, where women's basketball is screaming, hey, look, we have to have, you know, we have to play in the big arenas, we have to play in the domes, like the men do. Why are they playing the East Regional in Kingston, Rhode Island, at Ryan Arena with 7,614 seats? Okay.
The only good thing about that is it is geographically in the east. That's it.
It's 45 minutes from stores. Each school gets 500 tickets.
500?
The other 6,000 seats belong to UConn.
500?
That's what you get.
Wow.
And you don't think the UConn fans didn't buy up those seats? I mean, Ryan Arena is smaller than Gamble. Gamble seats 10. Okay, Worcester, the Centrum in Worcester, seats 12. Okay, the Garden seats 18 in Boston. They seat 16 in Hartford. They're going to a 7,500-seat band box to play games. It's a beautiful arena. But this is the regional, not the first two rounds. What's the thought process? Kevin Herr will tell us after the top of the hour.